720 WGN, John Hanson in for Jisuke here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That song sounds a lot better on a payday Friday. We're going to break it all down for you. A lot of coronavirus stories out there. Also going to be talking about today being National Unplugging Day. I got to figure out exactly what that means. That'll be in a little bit. But let's first jump right into things with Christine McDaniels. She's the Mercatus Center. And Christine, thanks so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
All right. We've got about a billion questions about where this economy is going. But unfortunately, with something like this, it's really hard to give you any definite answers.
It is. That's exactly right. Economists, you know, we have a lot of models, a lot of really complex and complicated developed advanced models. But they only work if you know what the shock is, right? So, for example, it's easier for us to tell you what the effect of a tax might be, but the effect of the coronavirus is harder because we don't really know how it's going to transmit through the economy in terms of supply or demand or both.
Yeah, a lot of people say that the basic structures of the market are fine. The measures are. We got good news again about unemployment earlier today. But I don't think people really understand that the coronavirus itself can impact those structures themselves.
Well, right. And the economic effects can outweigh the health effects to the extent people react, you know, that people overreact, which is understandable mm-hmm. because there's still so much uncertainty about the virus. You know, it's coming from a foreign country. It's coming from a country that didn't share fully the information with the rest of the world as early as they could have reportedly. And that has created a lot of anxiety. It's also very contagious, even though the it's not as fatal, but it's like a very, very bad flu. And really, until people resign to this new reality that we will be living with this new very, very bad flu that is very, very contagious, and people may overreact, and some sectors will be hit harder than others.
Yeah, complicating a lot of this is the fact that, of course, where this virus originated is in China. China makes a lot of the world's drugs. China's a major player in the world economy. And whether or not they're giving us all the true information is probably helping the instability of the market.
Exactly. The delay of the information coming out of China was very concerning. And I think, look, down the road, there will be a lot of aftermath discussions about all of this. But for now, I think, you know, people are just trying to get a handle on the spread of the disease. They're trying to control the disease, trying to control the economic effects. And, you know, the Fed cutting rates as they did recently, that will help. But that only goes so far. For example, the travel and tourism industry is taking a big hit. But, you know, a big fiscal stimulus is not necessarily going to help the travel and tourism industry, nor will a big rate cut. If people just don't want to travel, then they just don't want to travel.
Yeah, rates don't matter when there aren't consumers consuming the products or the services. You talk about the difficulty in sand in the wheels sort of modeling. Is there any, can you kind of paint out a picture for us the difference between if this is a problem for another month versus, let's say, it's a problem for another 6 or 7 months? I mean, the difference must be stark.
It really depends. I mean, it will depend on how the spread evolves over for the northern hemisphere. You know, it's the health experts are telling us it will probably slow down in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the southern hemisphere, that we know they're heading into their winter, we're heading into our summer. So so it might slow down for us, but for countries like Australia and other countries in the southern hemisphere, that it might speed up there. And then when the fall comes back and winter comes back, then hopefully the vaccine development will be further along and, you know, people will feel calmer. But in terms of international trade and the global economy, it's still unknown, whether or not people will really feel comfortable traveling even through the summer, as they see their neighbors or they hear of other cases in nearby communities getting ill.
You know, we're so used to on this show parsing words coming from the Fed. It's interesting, the Fed and the rest of the economy now trying to parse words that are coming from the medical field.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, and they have to be very careful on what they say, because obviously they don't want to create any, you know, unnecessary alarm. At the same time, they want people to take precautions. And I think, you know, that's what we're seeing. I mean, here in D.C., you know, I'm hearing, in fact, our own office just said, you know, just in case we have to work from home, mm-hmm. everybody should be ready to work from home. Hopefully that won't happen. It's highly unlikely. But then this morning we heard of our first case in Montgomery County, which is very close to Washington, D.C. And so we'll see how that develops.
Yeah,
but
everyone,
people are just taking the right precautions. But, you know, some sectors are getting hit harder than others. And, you know, so in terms of the economic effect, you know, we'll just have to see how that plays out. But some sectors will get hit harder than others.
Wait and see an answer that a lot of us hate. Christine McDaniels from the Mercatus Centers, we thank her for joining us. All right, we got another coronavirus story, I know. But before you all roll your eyes, you're going to want to listen to this one because it might help you out. We've got Jason Glassberg on the line. He's an ethical hacker. And Jason, thanks for joining us here.
No problem. Thanks for having me, sir.
What does ethical hacker mean, by the way?
Well, an ethical hacker is basically someone who explores security issues for companies for the better good to allow them to fix them, as opposed to a bad guy who looks to exploit them.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, it had the word ethical in it, so I figured you were one of the good guys.
Yeah, I'm a good guy. You know, basically, it's just another form of quality assurance.
Yeah.
Right? We focus on security and not, you know, things breaking.
We're going to get into these scams in 1 second, but while I've got you on the line, you're in the Seattle area, right?
I am. In fact, I am in ground zero, pretty much, right here in the nexus of Kirkland and Redmond. So very interesting times we're living in over here right now.
Well, I think that, you know, we've had some cases here in Illinois, 5, I believe, and, you know, we're aware of it happening. But I think that we still feel a little insulated from the major problems, and people think that everyone's overreacting. And there certainly is a lot of that going on, don't get me wrong. Paint us a picture. I mean, people aren't going to work in Seattle. Schools are closed, and that could happen to any of these cities across the country.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the fact that we're a coastal city where a lot of travelers and business come in from Asia makes it a little bit, again, more interesting. I think it's a kind of a common sense part of the world up here in the Pacific Northwest, so people tend to keep their heads on their shoulders. But, again, you know, people want to be careful, but there's still, you know, daily life going on, just not a lot of close contact.
You got a lot of toilet paper built up. You okay in that regard? I know that's a problem.
Yeah, that's the funniest thing. You know, you go into Costco or the local supermarkets, and the things that are sold out, toilet paper. So for whatever reason, there seems to be a run on toilet paper. It'd be a good time to invest in Scott tissue, I think.
Yeah, and I promise we'll get to the topic at hand, but I didn't know if you heard the story in Australia. They're dealing with a similar rush to toilet paper, and one of the newspapers there is actually printing 8 extra pages of the newspaper blank, so that people can use it in case they need to. Anyways.
It's so funny. It really is. I mean, you know, it's kind of a gallows humor kind of thing. It's just nice people can laugh. But we're all laughing at this bizarre rush on toilet paper.
Yeah, it's very strange. Okay, let's dive into what we came here to talk about. Scams, things that are going. What are you tracking?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. Obviously, this is a time of stress for a lot of folks, a lot of worry, people, you know, thinking their guard might be down. And so it's akin to what we see during tax season or even the holidays, where the bad guys take advantage of people's distraction and they take advantage of people not necessarily paying attention. And we're seeing the same kinds of attack, just a different kind of flavor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of the notices of fake sales or notices from the IRS that your taxes are due, we're seeing fake mails coming or phishing attacks from, you know, people claiming to be CDC or the WHO. Click here, you know, to get more information. And, of course, as soon as you click, you're opening yourself up for the potential for malware.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of phishing attacks and a lot of kind of impersonation attack. So with people not necessarily in the office and dealing remotely, we're seeing issues where people are pretending to be employees and sending out mails and requesting, you know, oh, the server's down, we need you to log in, please, you know, go here and log in. Or even extreme cases where folks are requesting money to be transferred. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, this is Frank from accounting. We need to do a small money transfer to this account. And unfortunately, you know, people fall for these things.
Yeah, and I imagine that, you know, with the market volatility being what it has been, especially in the last week, people trying to take advantage of people's financial concerns.
Well, exactly. Again, you know, people are not necessarily thinking of the larger picture. They're very kind of self-contained and worried. And again, we're seeing a lot of, especially in social media campaigns, of kind of pump and dump things. Hey, buy this stock. You know, don't buy this stock. Also, you know, kind of related, we're seeing these fake ads show up where, you know, there are items that are, you know, not in supply. In addition to toilet paper, people are looking for hand sanitizers and they're looking for masks. And so, you know, here's a rare item. Here's a hard to get item. Click on this link. And, you know, you're redirected to a site where, you know, things might not work out the way you think.
And we see this with natural disasters a lot, fake charities popping up for victims. Are we seeing similar things here?
Absolutely. Again, it's the same playbook that we see time and time again. It's just that, you know, the subject changes. But you can, you know, you can understand how people can fall victim because they're not necessarily paying attention.
Or they're just so fearful right now. They're fearful right now. They're fearful.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you bring up an interesting point. This whole business with fake charities is amongst the most despicable of these scams, because here people are trying to help other folks and they're being taken advantage of. So they're really the lowest of the low.
Yeah, I think a lot of our guards are down a little bit and they're preying on that. The one other interesting is the idea that, look, Russia doesn't need any more help weaponizing our social media, but this could give them another in to try and suppress voter turnout.
Well, exactly. Again, it's misinformation. It's being able to make people think things that aren't necessarily happening, right? I mean, you can easily paint a picture in your mind where you get these emails saying, hey, there's a lot of, there's a breakout in this voting location, best not to show up, you know, that kind of thing. And as silly as it sounds, people do fall for these things.
Yeah, so best advice to everyone, slow down, think twice. If it sounds too good to be true, yada, yada, yada.
Exactly. And really, you know, at the end of the day, verification is as easy as picking up the phone, right? And that's what we always tell folks. If you get a mail that seems a bit off from a bank or from an institution, just take the extra 5 minutes to pick up the phone and call them and verify.
That's great advice. All right, Jason, thanks so much. And best of luck out there, okay?
Well, thank you very much, sir.
And make sure you go get a little bit more toilet. You never know. That's the last thing I want to run out of. Like, I can run out of milk. I can run out of bread. I'm fine with that.
We stocked up already, so we're in good shape.
Well, that's good to know. I was worried. Ethical hacker Jason Glassberg. Have a good one. All right. So coming up in a little bit on the Wintrust Business Lunch, we're going to talk about Unplugging Day, what exactly that is, and plenty more coming up on WGN. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for G. Suki here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. A happy Friday to you. When I was driving over here, it was cloudy. Now, a lot of blue sky behind me. 18 floors on up. Hopefully, blue sky by you and harbinger of a great weekend ahead. A great way to start today would have been knowing that it was National Unplugging Day or National Day of Unplugging. Don't quite know what it is. I can take some guesses, but why do that when I can just ask Joe Boyle, CEO of True Software. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Hey, John, it's a pleasure to be here with you today.
All right, National Day of Unplugging. Tell us about it.
Yeah, the good news is, John, you didn't have to know about it this morning because it doesn't start until today at sunset.
Hey!
And runs through tomorrow at sunset.
Oh, okay. So it starts tonight after work. Is it timed specifically to March the 6th, or is it specifically timed to be a Friday night through the Saturday?
So the date is set for today, to commence today.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind it, it goes back about 10 years, and the National Day of Unplugging really recognizes that the more time we spend connected to our technology, the less time we spend connected to the other things that truly matter in our lives.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a big shock to anyone who has seen how much we use our phones, but it's the way we use our phones and where we use them, too, that is pretty surprising. I think that, you know, if you ever get caught where maybe you don't have your phone for a while, or if it's doing like a long update and you have to be away from it for an hour or two because you literally can't use it, or if you leave it somewhere, boy, we are always grabbing and turning them on.
Yeah, it's the thought of being without it is kind of paralyzing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So, National Day of Art, how do we celebrate this day?
So the idea is for 24 hours, starting at sundown, to disconnect from all forms of technology and to really use that time to reconnect with the people and things that matter to you most. And, you know, what we recognize is that, you know, when that concept was introduced 10 years ago, that was hard to do.
Right.
Today in 2020, with, you know, mobile devices being such a part of our lives, that concept is really tough. And so we wanted to talk to people in the workplace and understand, you know, just how much of your day is wrapped up in your smartphone, and what are the impacts of that. And so we conducted a survey to better understand how people are using technology throughout their day.
And what'd you find out?
So we knew going in that nearly everybody brings has a smartphone at work. What we didn't know is that, according to our survey, 61% of people are bringing their own personal device into work and using it throughout the day to do a combination of both, you know, personal and professional work. And, you know, with both of those things coming together, it helps us to kind of understand the reality that people are interacting with their mobile device over 2,600 times a day.
Oh, my gosh. But, you know, when you break that down hour by hour, let's say we're awake for 1,800 of those. That's probably, 18 hours of the 24. You know, that, 150, 160 times an hour? Yeah, 3 times a minute? It sounds like a lot, but that sounds about right.
Yeah, which, you know, you start to think about, boy, you know, I don't know that there's anything that I love enough to do 2,600 times a day, but yet we do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the impacts to that are very real in the workplace. I mean, you know, what the research tells us is that the average worker in today's world spends 4 to 5 hours out of every business week interacting with their smartphone for something that's not related to work.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Well, and you stop and think about that for a minute. You know, certainly there's the impact to the workplace, mm-hmm. but you also think about what is the impact to the person themselves, because what they're not getting done at work, they're taking home with them to get done there.
Yeah, for sure. The job's got to get done one way or the other. And you bring up a good point, because when you used to waste time on the company's dime, you did it, I don't know, on solitaire on the computer, in other different ways that didn't involve the phone, but then you didn't take it home with you because you didn't have the phone to do that. Are there certain solutions that people can do besides just unplugging? Is it, you mentioned people using their own phone for work, is it encouraging companies to kind of give people work phones so that there's a clear delineation between the work phone and the personal phone? Are there other solutions you guys have?
Yeah, you know, what we see is, in the end, it really doesn't matter whose phone it is. The devices, just the nature of our world today, it's naturally going to blend your personal and professional lives. And so what we recommend to companies is that they step back and reevaluate some of their policies around device usage and really begin to think about acceptable device usage situationally. And what we mean by that is, you know, recognize that, you know, what's okay for your employee to do on their device at home is different from what's okay in the office. And that's different even still from what's okay to do when they're in a high-risk environment, like out on the shop floor or driving a company vehicle. And so, you know, stepping back and thinking about it that way puts you in a position to create better policy and manage more effectively.
I knew fear of missing out was big, but I can't believe this stat that over a quarter of young people, 18 to 34 years old, have 6 or more apps on their phones that send alerts or push notifications throughout the day. You know, if you can't unplug totally, turning off some of those goes a long way.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Not only do we see, you know, the high likelihood to have apps set up to push information, but we also hear employees telling us, hey, we know that this is distracting, and we're making efforts to try and tune this out. Nearly 90% of people tell us, you know, when I really need to get something done, I'll put the phone onto silent, but it doesn't work because they all respond. The moment that phone buzzes or vibrates, even if you have it on silent, we can't help ourselves but pick it up and interact with it. In fact, only 4% of the people we surveyed told us that they were able to wait till the end of the day to see who liked someone's comment or who took a photo of their lunch today. So the challenge is very real. It's a real tug of war between what we know we should be doing and what the technology is drawing us into.
You're speaking a lot of truth, Joe Boyle. It is National Day of Unplugging. Start tonight at sundown. Go 24 hours. I'm going to try it myself, Joe. You've inspired me. Thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you.
All right. Our next guest here on the Wintrust Business Lunch was booked a couple days ago, but his message and what he's going to talk about couldn't be more apt to today. We just found out that the Ace Hardware Show in Chicago next week getting canceled, and wondering, like, what happens to all the money? What happens to the vendors? What happens to the people that were planning on going? There's a lot of moving parts there when events this big get canceled, and a lot of them are getting canceled across the country because of coronavirus. So insurance quotes analyst, let me try that one more time. Insurance quotes analyst Michael Giusti is joining us now. Michael, thanks for coming on the program.
No, very. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
happy to be here.
Okay, so when you're talking about special events insurance, are these expos what we're talking about here?
Yeah, so special events insurance comes in multiple layers. And so, like, every single event that is going to be held is going to be required to have special events insurance, but that typically is not the same thing as special events cancellation insurance.
Right, and they cover, like, medical things that might happen at the event, stuff like that.
Yeah, they think of it as like a general liability policy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's if your vendor starts a fire and at the trade show, or someone slips and falls, that's the type of thing that it would cover. But you can get cancellation policies as an additional rider. And so I know the Olympics, for example, has one of these, and it's syndicated with multiple reinsurers. But the smaller, like the Ace Hardware, I'm not entirely sure whether they have the cancellation policy or not, but as you get further smaller in the trade shows, they're less and less likely to have them.
What does the cancellation policy help? I mean, who ends up getting paid out? Is it vendors? Is it the event itself? Is it walk us through who can get this and who benefits from
it? So, really, everyone involved in the trade show is going to be insuring themselves. So, the company that puts on the event is going to be most likely the one to have the policy, and that would reimburse them for the costs of the hall, meals and catering that they've already signed the contracts for, those types of things. The vendors could have also bought their own cancellation policies, but most likely had not, and so they wouldn't get any kind of compensation out of that.
Are there policies available for them? Do they for vendors to protect themselves against possible cancellations?
There are some specialized lines that will write for a cancellation policies, even for just a wedding, right? So you can get them, but again, they're very specialized and niche, and most people, unless you have a reason to be thinking about it, you're not going to think to, oh, maybe I should get something in case of an epidemic, right?
Yeah, you know, that's right, just, right. It's not on your
and
radar.
The other thing to keep in mind, though, even if you do have the cancellation policy, there's even a further layer on top of this, in that epidemics and biological reasons, outbreaks, are excluded from many of these policies unless you get an additional rider on top of your cancellation rider.
Look, I'm sure anyone who is listening who has dealt with insurance in any sort of way knows that the fine print, of course, is the devil's in the details with that sort of stuff. I got a question.
Absolutely.
For, let's say an event goes on and a virus, let's say the coronavirus were to go through one of these things, people were to have been sick and they can show that they got sick at the expo. Is the expo liable in that way, or do you, by walking into these events, know the risks that are associated with that?
So anything with the lawyers involved, the answer is, well, it depends and sort of, right?
Right.
But, yeah, in general, that would fall under that first policy that I described, which is your special events liability policy. So if an attendee could show that you were negligent in holding the show in the face of the danger and went and sued you, this liability policy would be the one that would step in and cover you there.
And I imagine it's a similar answer in terms of of the vagueness at first, but the idea of how long out do they have? I mean, I imagine it's in the fine print, but usually for a cancellation coverage, how soon do you have to cancel? Because I imagine most cancellations, most of them, are going to be coming rather coming up to the date.
Yeah, so by definition, it's going to be, you know, undefined. You know, it's going to be the, like you said, in the language of the policy, if there's any specific limitations. But one of the things to keep in mind with cancellation is if it was your choice, it's almost certainly not covered. So the language in a lot of these policies is disinclination to travel is not covered.
Okay.
So if you just didn't want to put on the show or you felt that it was the right thing to do to keep everyone safe, that's good, but it's not covered.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so then people that are looking for special events, you know, we talk about expos. Do they even go down to smaller trade shows or even just events that, you know, maybe small the businesses or medium-sized businesses are putting on? How small can these coverages get?
Oh, absolutely, and they're relatively inexpensive for the smaller events like that. I mean, we're talking in the hundreds of dollars, so it's really not a real burdensome. You know, I think that I heard that the Olympics spent $500 million on their cancellation policy,
wow,
which makes sense because it's a much bigger risk. But yeah, we're talking a couple hundred dollars for a smaller event show, and I think that this round of cancellations is maybe raising the awareness for a lot of people.
Given the day and age we live in, with world turmoil being what it is, or can be. It doesn't surprise me that the Olympics did that. Plus, there's a lot of money there.
Yeah.
But I imagine a lot of these trade shows are going to be losing out on a lot of business and a lot of money, unfortunately. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Fascinating topic when we do a deeper dive on the coronavirus. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.